Ambiente, biodiversité,
sustainable consumption,
protéger,
chocolate,
nature,
cacao, biosimotita,
Afrique,
fair trade,
America Latina,
gas nordicos,
apopsilosi,
cambio climatico,
degrado forestale,
soja,
deforestation,
durabilité environnementale,
measures against deforestation under the spotlight.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Deforestation Podcast. This is the last episode of our journey, which explored the links between food production and deforestation. We, Erika, Eva, and Carlos, are glad to have you here for an exceptional moment in Brussels, wandering around European institutions.
Yes, Carlos, and we have the great opportunity to meet and discuss about the upcoming EU regulation on deforestation-free products with two members of the European Parliament, that we also call MEPs.
It was important for us to give the stage to all stakeholders. This is why we have interviewed producers and European consumers in the previous episodes. Time was now to turn to lawmakers, let's say. We warmly thank Saskia Brickmont and Mark Tarabella for their time and their interest in our project.
We will be talking with them about the aim of the regulation, its potential outcomes, and we'll also share the concerns raised by the producers and their representatives that we met. This is a very dense episode, so let's not wait any longer.
Many thanks for accepting our invitation. We are delighted to be here today with you, Mr. Tarabella. Could you briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Mark Tarabella. I'm elected in Belgium. I'm a member of the European Parliament since 2004, involved in particular in the Agriculture Committee and also in the Internal Market and Consumer Protection.
So the EU is currently working on a new regulation on deforestation-free products. Could you explain to us in a few words the aim of this new regulation?
Yes, the aim of this regulation is to put a duty of care on the shoulders of market operators with the objective of stopping global deforestation. The ultimate goal is that no product entering the European market should come from deforested areas. This is essential for our environment, but also for our consumers.
What's the role and the priorities of the European Parliament in the process, and how can it reinforce the proposal?
The European Parliament is helping to strengthen the proposal by working to make the provision more precise and clearer in the interest of the proposal's effectiveness and efficiency. In the IMCO committee, Internal Market and Consumer Protection Committee, we have limited the competence of some of the provision of the proposal, but we do not have competence on the whole proposal. I can summarize my main priorities in 3 points. Firstly, a holistic approach to the root causes of deforestation is needed. For example, to extend the scope of this proposal not to direct deforestation, but to all ecosystems linked to deforestation. Secondly, it is important that this proposal also aims to ensure respect for human rights, in particular, for example, the right of indigenous people and local communities. And thirdly, do not remove from this proposal the fact that it also applies to small and medium-sized enterprises. They represent 90% of the companies covered by the proposal.
In this podcast, we had the opportunity to discuss the topic with producers of several countries that rely on export. And they shared with us their hopes, but also concerns that without adequate financial and technical support, they might be excluded from the EU market. So our question now is, how can we support the smallholders' compliance to the new market access requirement?
We are aware of those fears and we are working with them in mind. We want to introduce into this proposal an article which would provide that operators should by any means support the compliance of their suppliers with the regulation, including through investment and capacity building, as well as pricing mechanism that would enable a living income for the producers. And for the role played by the EU, companies need to make efforts to support small holders to comply with the new requirement, for example, by ensuring that a fair price is paid for the smallholders from whom they're sourced so that they can comply with the requirements. Just as it is the role of the EU when working on this type of regulation, the institutions must find ways to ensure that a balance is struck between environmental protection and the needs of smallholders. And the proposal and the work that the Parliament is doing gives special attention to smallholders.
What's the role and the priorities of the European Parliament in the process, and how can it reinforce the proposal?
You're right to insist on the importance of to have a legislation on due diligence. For example, I was rapporteur in the Development Committee for an opinion on the initiative report before the proposal of the Commission that we wait for a long time. Finally, this proposal arrived. But I think that's it's very important to insist because both those legislation can help and to be useful to have a better regulation on the sector and to tackle a part of the deforestation. But I think that's those legislation play as a role, a key role. It depends of the final decision. And you know, when I see I assist to some debates in the IMCO, Internal Market and Consumer Protection Committee, I'm not sure that we'll reach an efficient new legislation, because some groups, conservative, are reluctant to change. And I think that also for due diligence and tackle deforestation, I think that wait and see. And I hope that we'll go to a good direction, but I'm not sure.
Thank you for this answer. And we know from producers' reports and existing research that purchasing practices such as prices that are below the cost of production, for instance, can have very bad effects both on human rights and on the environment. So do you think that such business practices should be taken into account in the development of these regulations?
Yes, you also are right on this topic, because, for example, I also in the past was I played a role in a directive for tackling the unfair commercial practices in agriculture sector on this. But I think it's important to take into account the sustainable development, the sustainable economy. Means that we have an economic aspect, but also linked with a social aspect and environmental is a definition of sustainability. And I think that to tackle unbalanced and unfair commercial practices is very important in all sectors, not only agriculture, but also on the normal economy. Those three dimensions has to be taken into account more in the future than we have currently now the situation.
Overall, EU consumers are raising a clear demand for more sustainability in all aspects of daily life. Do you feel their voices are taken into account enough at an EU level? And how to be better protected against greenwashing?
I understand the demand and an increasing demand of consumer. They are right to favorize fair trade or organic productions or both. And I think that's. But they have to be conscious that they need to pay more than standard products to reward better, to give a better salary to workers in this sector, etc. And I think that they have to be conscious of that. And of course, in exchange, they have to be sure that the label is true. There is no greenwashing, no advertising. It's true, and the producer is well paid, and the product is claimed that it's organic, it's no pesticide and no chemical fertilizer, for example. And I think that's and we have at the European level also to control more. In some countries, the control is effective, in others not or less. Control and sanctions when there is no respect of the rule or the label. And I think it's a relation of liability between the actors, and I think it's important to insist on that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tarabella, for your precise answers and your opinion on this regulation.
Here, we understand that the main objective of the regulation is to make the production of companies more transparent and reliable with regard to environmental issues. Many consumers want to prefer more and more products that do not exploit people and our planet. Since this can be only done at a higher cost, European and national authorities must guarantee the reliability of products to their consumers. That is why regulation is needed.
So we are still in the European Parliament and have the chance to do another interview. This time we have MEP Saskia Brinkmann from the Greens of the European Parliament. She will give us an overview of the regulation and what is at stake, but also tackle the issues of trade and the daily life of a parliamentarian. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Saskia. Thank you for being here.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
So Saskia, you're currently one of the youngest MEPs. Can you present yourself in a few words and explain to our audience what made you become active in politics and more specifically at EU level?
Thanks. Yes, I'm Saskia Brinkmann, so Green MEP, as you said, from Belgium. And before entering into politics, I've been an activist for Oxfam Solidarity, so very much committed to sustainable development and especially fair trade issues related to our trade rules. And also as individual consumers, I realized how much we have a strong and powerful impact through the way we consume on the rest of the world. It's how it all started, so it made sense once I became an MEP back in 2019 to be a member, an active member of the International Trade Committee.
Saskia, you're a full member of the Trade Committee and also participate in other informal trade groups within the Parliament. How would you define the key components of fair and sustainable trade, and how can we ensure that these components are mainstreamed in trade policy in future years?
Well, there is a Responsible Business Conduct Working Group and also a Fair Trade Working Group gathering MEPs committed to the principles of fair trade. And I think it's really important to have those MEPs. It's actually a network of same-minded people that want in their respective committees, be it ENVI, be it AGRI, be it INTA, so International Trade, or even in the Droit Committee dealing with human rights, to promote the same principles. And I think it's through mainstreaming these principles in our different committees and files, and not only saying, okay, fair trade, okay, it's trade, so it's trade-related matters. I think in order to enhance the coherence of EU policies, we need to effectively mainstream them, and it goes along with gender mainstreaming, it goes along with fighting against child labor, it goes along with other areas of policies that we need to focus on in order to make our trade really sustainable. And also trying to see which would be the impact and the adverse impact of our decisions on the ground. Which means that from the Commission side, we want impact assessments, ex ante impact assessments before a trade agreement is being negotiated and agreed upon, of course. What would be the impact on workers' rights, on human rights, on sustainability issues, environment, biodiversity? What about the use of chemicals, pesticides? So a broad picture of topics that would be covered in this impact assessment to see where we're going and what the negotiation with the counterpart needs to focus on.
Now focusing on the issue at hand, deforestation. What measures or actions were already taken before the Commission presented the proposal, and what do you think will change with this regulation?
So I think the EU has already taken concrete steps and good steps towards tackling deforestation worldwide and in its international relations and trade relations, but obviously not enough. Because the EU approach doesn't prevent products issued or contributing to deforestation to be imported on the EU market. So, of course, the control system needs to be enhanced and the sanctions-based system also. I think we can incentivize, we can ask on a voluntary basis to act, but it's not enough. It needs to be followed by sanctions if there's no compliance with the rules. The new regulation needs to bring more perspectives also on what is imported into the EU market and compliance of our companies with the respect of anti-deforestation rules, also all along the supply chain. And this is one of the elements that we need to focus on. Another element is that the right and the principle of prior consent of communities also needs to be recognized in this specific regulation and in other agreements, such as trade agreements, because what we notice very often is that deforestation has an adverse impact on local communities. They're not being consulted. Those communities are expelled from their lands in order to promote deforestation for agricultural purposes or for cattle, for instance. Probably what is missing in the current EU approach, be it the deforestation regulation, anti-deforestation regulation, be it other legislative tools, is to recognize this interdependency worldwide. If we, through our economic partnerships, for instance, encourage deforestation abroad, it will also have an adverse impact on us. And not only, but this needs also to be recognized on local communities.
I very much agree these are important problems and of course raises the issue of implementation and enforcement. But one of the risks raised by stakeholders is to end up with a double dynamic that would, on the one hand, attract sustainable products to the EU market, and on the other, divert deforestation-related goods to other countries. How can this be avoided?
I think we need to push for a virtuous circle, and it needs to start somewhere. And I think the EU market is quite attractive for other parts of the world, and in order to import on the EU market, we need to find common rules and common standards. But, of course, the fear that you point out is real. And so that's why the EU also needs to bring these topics at the multilateral level, at international level, such as the World Trade Organization level. I think we have the power, we have the weight to weigh on international negotiations and to push this climate agenda, broad climate environmental agenda, in the international trade rules. And you might say that the current context is not positive, that multilateralism is at stake. It is true, but at the same time, what we see at WTO side is interministerial conferences agreeing upon specific issues, including text on deforestation and tackling climate change. So it's interesting to see that at international level, some countries are keen to work together and have a common approach at international level. And I think that we're missing that from the EU so far.
I would like to focus now on labor rights and supply chains. We know that tackling the climate crisis is one of the main objectives of the proposal. But how are human rights and social aspects being taken into account within this file?
It's important to also talk about this dimension indeed, because there's also a responsibility lying on the company's shoulders. And this is why the EU is working on several instruments, including the Due Diligence Directive, imposing social and environmental standards to the EU companies and their first and second level suppliers. So far, the proposal, the text as proposed by the European Commission, only covers a certain size of multinationals, I would say, of big companies. What we would like from a European Parliament perspective, and that's what we are currently working on, is to have a directive covering all the EU companies and their suppliers all along the supply chain. Why is that? It's also coming from the SMEs themselves, saying we need a level playing field. We need a fair competition amongst the companies, and how can we reach that? By having common rules, common standards. Because some companies, smaller companies, that are entitled to respect those standards, due diligence standards, are facing unfair competition by companies that do not respect the same rules. And this is an issue that the due diligence directive is supposed to tackle, but again, we need to enlarge the scope of this directive in order to cover all the companies. And then you have also other instruments. I will not enter into detail of all of them, but the Commission's approach is to say we have different instruments. The challenge will be to have a comprehensive approach at the end, all those instruments together, because you have another one on forced labor that is coming with a certain approach promoted by the EU Commission. So we need to see if all those instruments together will be strong enough to tackle all those issues related to environmental, climate, and social standards related. Yet, we're not meeting the fair trade principles with all those tools together. So I think we still have many challenges ahead.
Focusing now on producers, you might know that as part of our episodes, we interviewed Latin American producers, and they referred to the issue of a very low prices as a barrier for them to look into more sustainable and deforestation-free agricultural practices. Do you agree with them?
I can hear it, but I also see that producers that are complying with higher standards, decent wages, make it. So to some point, there's also a question of voluntary proactivity in order to enhance the standards. So the problem is also related to the benefits that companies need to reach. I think you can find a better balance between the growth perspective and the wish for a company to grow, and doing it in respect of social and environmental rules. I think it's also both a challenge and a perspective for them, because from consumers' side, there's a growing expectation that companies respect environmental and social standards. But there's also a challenge ahead, because those companies, if they do not adapt their practices, they will not be resilient in case of climate impacts, adverse climate impacts on businesses. And there are many projections, many studies, many models showing that companies that are putting in place the necessary steps to adapt to climate change and to lower the impacts, which means respecting environment and restoring biodiversity, for instance, lowering the negative impact on the environment, if they do not adapt, their business model will blow up to some point.
Saskia, I wanted to ask you more about your day-to-day work. Have you met with the different actors who fall under the scope of the regulation? And if yes, how are those concerns being considered by you or other MEPs, especially those raised by civil society?
So we have both sides, the companies, the producers, the citizens and civil society sides, which are reaching out to the EU institutions, including Parliament, including involved MEPs, to raise awareness about the impacts that they think will apply if we conclude a trade agreement, a new regulation, be it the anti-deforestation regulation or other legislative tools. I think our duty is to listen to everybody and then to make up our own minds and to see how we can address specific impacts, adverse effects of a regulation or legislation into our work as lawmakers. This is also why it's important to have impact assessments involving the civil society in a large manner. So as well the economic sector as the civil society sector. So all the stakeholders should be implied in the drafting of an impact assessment, because those concerns on the ground in the partner countries should be taken into account from scratch, from the beginning. This is not done. Today, it's not a reality. That's what we're fighting for when we talk with the Commission. It's that it becomes a rule. It should be a rule that stakeholders are involved from the beginning, and not only the strongest lobby or the agro-business lobby, for instance, in the Mercosur agreement, because we know their interests.
And now moving to the final question of the interviews. What advice would you give to young activists interested in sustainable and fair trade?
Go for it. We need you. We need you. I think there is a huge influence and of civil society members, activists, people involved in different organizations, young people going to the streets to ask to end ecocide, to ask for climate change tackling by the EU institutions and the rest of the world. The impact is real. And there are different ways of getting involved. As I said, I started being a volunteer in an Oxfam shop. That's how I got engaged in politics, and now I'm MEP. And consistent with what I've been always fighting for, in I do it now. So I fight for the respect of human rights and the respect of our planet. So I really want to push the young people to get involved, because it makes a difference, and it might not be seen, the impact might not be seen directly by them, thinking they do not influence, but they do push the agenda. I'm convinced that this commission would never have gone for the Green Deal as a mainstreaming policy for the mandate if the young activists had not been in the streets before the elections and during the campaign. The power is also in the streets and in the organizations, civil society organizations, for sure. And finally, I would also say that, of course, you have this activism, but you also have political moments that are key. And I really call all the young people to use that key moment, which is the election moment, because it will make an even bigger difference if the elected representatives represent their aspirations. And of course, the more people go voting, the more they can influence the political agenda and the political balance inside this house. And of course, you can also get engaged in the Young Fair Trade Advocates program that has been financed by Erasmus Plus, so promoting the implication of the youth. And this is an opportunity, I think, for many young people to get involved.
What a great way to finish the episode, Saskia. Thank you so much for being here today, and we hope to have you again in the future. We had the chance to highlight in our exchange with Saskia Brickman the importance of bringing all stakeholders around the table to create an efficient regulation. The EU has already taken some concrete steps to tackle deforestation, but more is needed. This is why the regulation is so important. It was also very inspiring to discuss with one of the youngest MEPs and to see how far the youth engagement in environmental and fair trade movements can bring you.
Here we are. That was the last episode of our Deforestation podcast, exploring the links between food and the deforestation phenomenon.
This project helped us to better understand what is at stake when it comes to deforestation and what are the opinions of the different stakeholders part of the food chain. It was really important for us to gather the different views and to give the floor to the different actors. So we heard experts, producers, consumers, and finally lawmakers. And we really hope that you guys were able to get a general overview of the challenge and also of the solutions brought by the different stakeholders.
This project was also a way for us, young Europeans, to get involved and to better understand how to address global issues such as deforestation. We learned about advocating, we met people from all over the world, and we definitely want to continue engaging in the fair trade movement and sustainability topics.
This podcast is the result of a year-long project of the Young Fair Trade Advocates in Belgium, and we are very proud of the results and very grateful to all the people who made it possible. So, a big thanks to all the participants, to the Fair Trade Advocacy Office in Brussels, to Tom and Bibi from Both Nomads, who helped us in the conception and mastering of the podcast, and to all the partners who have been supporting us in the steps of this project.